Hey, you guys, it's Christine Blackburn from the Storyworthy podcast. Today, I'm celebrating my 9-year anniversary, part one. That's right, today you're going to hear clips from 9 of my very favorite shows over the last 9 years, and next week, you'll hear 9 more. Today, you'll be hearing stories from Adam Carolla, Wendy McClendon Covey, Mike Carano, Jude Shelton, Rick Overton, Sasha Rothschild, Toby Huss, Kevin Allison, and Sugar Ray Leonard. It's a good one, guys. Stick around. Hey, it's Christine Blackburn, and you're listening to Storyworthy. Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of 9 years or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with comedian Alonzo Bowden. Alonzo is just one of those guys that is not only super funny, he's super intelligent. He has a fantastic podcast of his own called Who's Paying Attention that I never miss. It's a topical podcast, mostly about politics. But Alonzo, like, for me, he breaks it down, like, so cleanly. I completely align with his politics. There are no nonsense. It's straightforward. It's common sense. Anyway, Alonzo Bowden was on the show last week talking about his recent experience in Saudi Arabia, and it's super interesting. And so go back and listen to that, you guys, but not now, because today you're here with me, and guess what? I'm alone. Yeah, that's right. Just me coming to you guys, sharing my favorite 9 stories over the last 9 years. I gotta say, it was incredibly difficult to choose 9 stories over 9 years. I mean, there's over 565 episodes of Storyworthy, so how could I just choose 9? I actually didn't. I chose 18. Today, you're going to hear the first 9, and then next week will be part 2, and you'll hear 9 more stories that I absolutely love. I also want to talk today about what I'm kicking off, which is my 10th year of podcasting, and I'm kicking off a new Patreon page. Now, you guys know, as fans of mine, that I sometimes have sponsors. Not all the time, but a lot of times I have sponsors, but they come and go. But you guys are always there. You know what I mean? Like, you guys are my fans, and I know that because I see the download numbers. I know you're listening. I see the demographics, and I know who's listening. And now I'm coming to you to ask you to join me over on Patreon, patreon.com/storyworthy, and if possible, help me out. And what I mean by help me out is by a small donation. If you give me $5 a month, first of all, I put out 5 shows a month, right? Because there's 4 regular Storyworthies and then the bonus Story Smash, the game show. So I give you 5 episodes a month. So for $5 a month, you will become a patron on my page. That's $1 a show and totally worth it. You know that. The second tier on Patreon, I've called the Involved Fan. The Involved Fan. If you guys become an Involved Fan, I'm going to give you free tickets to any of my shows. How about that? I've been performing quite a bit lately, more and more stand-up comedy than ever before, and of course, Story Smash as well every month at the Hollywood Improv. So if you follow me, you give me $10 a month, I'm going to give you free tickets to any of my shows. How about that? And also, I'll be happy to always respond to your texts or emails. So if you become a Tier 2 subscriber, then I will be happy to contact you and we can chat, you know. Anyway, 2 more tiers. Tier 3, you guys. This is going to involve everything you got in the first 2 tiers. And are you ready for this? For $20 a month? $20 a month, you guys. I will help you craft your story. Yeah, you heard me. I will create a Google Doc that we will share, and I will help you get your story out. I'm actually very good at this, and whether you're a new storyteller or a seasoned pro, everybody can use another set of eyes on your story. So really, you guys, consider joining me at Patreon over there on the Tier 3 level. And then Tier 4, you guys, if you have a business that you would like me to sponsor, I'll do that for you. You give me $50 a month and I will sponsor your business. That is crazy talk. You heard me. My sponsors have to pay a lot more than that, but you're my listeners and I love you. And if you are interested in me promoting your business or giving you a 90-second ad, I'll be happy to do that. I'll even send you an MP3 of it so you can use it over again. How about that? Again, you guys, that's over on my Patreon page, patreon.com/storyworthy. That's the tier 4. That's what you get right there. Check it out, you guys, really. Please check out my Patreon page. I super appreciate it. You know that I do. And now let's head straight into my favorite 9 stories over the last 9 years, part 1. The reason why I'm even here is because of this guy. Adam Carolla is absolutely one of my heroes, and I adore him. On my 5-year anniversary, I was lucky enough to get him as a guest. And today I want to share part of his story with you guys again. It is, it's too funny. So right now, you guys, listen to Adam Carolla and his story, Closets, 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 that originally aired on July 20th, 2015.
This is Adam Carolla, and you are listening to Story Worthy. I went to the address on Otsego Street, and I knocked on the door. And again, I was just looking at the invoice and just looking at the address because the rest was math that I'd already done in my head. And I knocked on the door, and I think we used to call them Spanish maids back then. Now they're just squatty chicks from Guatemala, but back then we called them Spanish maids. I don't know. It's sort of noble. They might probably even had outfits back then. But anyway, the Spanish maid answered the door. She was holding an infant, and I had two things going for me. I had a toolbox under one hand and a lot of personal momentum, which I believe if you have that personal momentum, you can walk right in the front door of the White House and do whatever you want. I literally, there's nothing that can stop you when you're not doubting yourself. Like I always have this theory that I think you could steal about anything if you didn't know it. Like you could walk into any store and grab any piece of electronics or an apple off a cart or whatever. If you truly didn't know it, like you truly were distracted or trying to get a price on it, and then your phone rang, you could just walk out to your car and leave if you had enough. But we're also full of insecurity and doubt. We'd flop sweat. We'd be, you know, who's the guy sweating through his shirt, looking over his shoulder all the time? Who's the junkie on aisle 9, you know? So she just looked at me. And she just went like, you know, porque, or something. And I just said, out of the way. I'm installing the closet. And she got out of the way. So she figured, obviously, there's something she didn't know. Yeah. And the owners of the home were not there. I'm assuming, I always just assumed that the parents were working and she was there looking after the infant. And I walked in and I walked right to the master bedroom. And again, this should have been one of those things. I opened the closet door and it was filled with gowns and shoes and every long hanging, double hanging, everything. And I thought, God damn it. That we always tell them to clean out the goddamn closet before we show up. But every once in a blue moon, they screw the pooch and they forget about it. And you don't want to see what your closet looks like unloaded in an angry fashion. Unloaded with malice, you know what I mean? Like ripping stuff off. It all went onto the bed. Everything just went onto the bed. And, you know, that's what you get when you don't clean your closet out. And then popped off the old knotty pine shelf and pole, they would call it, and maybe even popped off the baseboard in there and proceeded to install the new closet. Now, people will ask, well, how did your custom closet fit inside this existing space when, in fact, you're at the wrong house? The answer to that is simple. Every house in the San Fernando Valley was built, you know, between like 1951 and 1963. Like all those, the houses one street over in North Hollywood have about the same footprint and floor plan. The master bedrooms, you could hardly call it a master bedroom, but they're all the same. They all have the same closet. They're about 2 feet deep. They're like 7 foot wide. Some of them have the bifolding, you know, louver doors. Some have the mirror doors. But not only did the closet fit, but we always would leave the last bay of the closet to be sort of an accordion where I would cut the pole on the job site. And so it could be 32 inches or it could be 28 inches. We didn't have to measure it out exactly because we had some play in the very last bay. And so that's what I did. And I installed a closet. And I also remember installing bathrobe hooks. In they wanted bathrobe hooks. And they said, in the master bathroom there was three big chrome hooks that were pre-mounted on a piece of what would be either melamine or corian or something or whatever prefab pre-vinyl coated that we would edge band and then we would screw it to the door. And so that's what I did. And Cortron or melamine is what you would use. And and then I would have left, and I was leaving. I packed up my tools, I put them in a van, and I did recall that I had to get paid. And normally, I would have just been down the road and heading back to beautiful, smoggy, sunny Burbank. But I said, I need a check to the Spanish maid, who did not speak any much English, hence the title of Spanish maid. And I said, I need some dinero. And she said, no. I said, a check. Someone must have left you a check. It was discussed. My boss told you, leave the check. No check. I said, dinero, no, come on. It's around here somewhere, right? They talked to the owner, and my boss told me the owner had the check, was left there, you know, pick up the check. No. And I was showing her the invoice. Like, look, here's the amount. Here's the amount I need, the invoice. And she looked at the invoice, and she said, And she walked over to by the front door, and she grabbed a piece of mail. Yeah. And she grabbed the piece of mail, and she's like, look. And I was like, yeah, there it is. 1-1-7-4-9. Aren't we? And then she started pointing at my invoice. It said Hartsook Street. And I was like, it's always the worst. I tell everyone, I think it's the worst part of life. The worst part of life is the discovery. Like, it's not the part, like, you think about it. If you ever discover your car is stolen, it's not the pre-discovery part, because that means you still own a Camry. And in the post-discovery part, you're in kind of, I got to call the insurance company, I got to call the cops. Like, you're in a business mode. You know, I got to take care of this. That moment of like, I parked it right under the palm tree, right? There's the, you know, it's got the transmission fluid link that always looks like Abe Lincoln's head right there. Like, yeah, this is where, you have that moment like, the car's, Now, 8 seconds later, you're fine. You're into, I got to call the insurance guy, and I'm going to argue with somebody, or woe is me, or whatever it is. But it's not that painful. Like, I was looking at this invoice, and I was just like, yeah, 1-1-7-5. And I just, like, looked up, and I just went like, and she just went like, and I was like, oh, shit. I'm not proud of this, but I grabbed the cordless drill. I put on reverse. I started running for the closet to back out every screw. The things were all like modular. You could like snap them together and screw them together. I started backing everything out. She started running for the kitchen with the child now, like extra cradled and protecting the child. And she was calling, I imagine, the owners of the house at work or somewhere. And it was pre-cell phone days, so only Dan Tana from Vegas actually had a cell phone back then, and that was wired to his car. I backed out every screw, threw everything into the van like a coward, ran back like the Grinch that stole Christmas, you know, took the bathrobe hooks off the bathroom, took everything and jumped in the van and took off. I couldn't go too far because I could only go one street over to the exact same address. It's not like I could flee to Mexico or anything. So my escape route was just go up, turn right, go to the next street, turn right, go back 100 feet and park there. But I also knew, I was like, it was literally one street over at the exact same address. I was like, probably from the backyard, it's probably like 100 feet away from where the crime had gone down. I, to this day, still have no idea whatever happened, whoever happened. I have no idea what she told the owners. I have no idea what the owners could have made of what happened, but that was me installing a closet in the wrong house.
All right, I have to tell you also, you guys, about that story. We were recording at Adam's studio over in Burbank, and it's a great studio. I guess it's Glendale, actually. Anyway, it's a great studio, super cool space. He has hot rod cars on the walls. And here's my favorite part of Adam's studio. The vending machines, and I think there's two or three, they're all free. How about that? That's a class act, man. If I ever get my own studio, I'm going to have free vending machines. There, you heard it here first. All right, you guys, the next story coming at you is from one of the most talented actresses that I not only love, I actually know her. We've become friends, and she is a quality, quality person. I love her to death. You guys, here she is, actress Wendy McClendon Covey, talking about the birds and the bees, and this was recorded September 14th, 2015.
Hey, it's Wendy McClendon Covey, and you're listening to Storyworthy. I had come home from school with such terrible information, my mom had to set me straight because she knew I would go around telling everybody this terrible, terrible information. Now, because I was on Reno 911 and I played a lady with swagger, everyone assumes that I have lived the life of a wanton slut. No. I actually grew up in a very religious family, and I was so confused about what sex was until, well, never mind. It took me a long time to get it sorted out. And you don't need to know when that finally happened. Let's just stick to the topic. Okay, so third grade, and I went to a private Christian school, which I loved, by the way. I have no bad feelings about my private Christian school, but very odd that I would come home giggling, like laughing so hard to myself about this new knowledge. My mom said, "What are you laughing at?" "I know how babies are made." "Oh, really? How are they made?" "It's gross." "Oh, yeah? Well, tell me." "Well, the man and the lady take off their clothes and they each stand in a corner of the room and then they keep running into each other and running into each other and crashing together until their butts hook." And my mom said, "No, no, that's not what happens. I guess I'm going to have to tell you what happens, but I don't want you going around telling people this. I don't know if other people, you know, that's up to people's parents to tell them." Okay. My mom is very, very concerned that she has to tell me this. So what does she do? She gets out a drawing pad and a pencil. And she draws something that looks like a banana or a boomerang or maybe a hook. That's why when people say, "Oh, we hooked up," that phrase skeeves me out so much because I think of hooks going into places where hooks ought not go. But anyway, so she draws this thing, and I'm thinking, I don't like where this is going. And then she thinks better of it and tears it up. Okay, listen. This is what happens, Wendy. When a man and a woman are married, all right, that's the first thing she said. This only happens when a man and a woman are married. Sometimes the man's penis gets really, really hard, just like as hard as a rock. very hard. Like, you can't even believe it. It gets so hard. And he puts it in the lady. And then a seed goes from his body into her body. And then she is pregnant. Okay? That's it. And then 9 months later, a baby is born. Now, hearing that now, do you think there are a few holes in this story? Do you think there's some things that you know, that she left out? So I'm thinking, yuck, I'm never doing this. All I can think of, I'm trying to put this into context. Right away, my mind goes to America's parents, Ma and Pa Ingalls. On Little House on the Prairie. And I'm thinking about them wanting to have babies. And when Mary and Laura and Carrie are outside playing on the prairie, Ma and Pa Ingalls have some love time, all right? And what happens is they take off their clothes and they stand there facing each other and smiling. For some reason, his penis gets hard because that's what happens when you're married. And being married, that happens from time to time. He puts it in and a seed comes out. I'm thinking a seed, what, the size of a walnut, a jelly bean, goes in. There's an audible pop and then it's over. All right. And sexual intercourse has taken place.
Wendy McClendon Covey. Is she the best or what, you guys? She also judges Story Smash frequently here in Los Angeles. And again, if you're ever in LA, you gotta catch a Story Smash. It's just the funniest damn game show you ever saw. It's gonna be on TV, I guarantee you. I just gotta get it sold, and I will. You know that. You guys know I'm persistent, and you know I am never gonna stop until I get that thing on TV. So you guys, check out StorySmashShow.com and also follow me over there on Instagram at StorySmash. That has the best pictures of it, if I do say so myself. My Instagram StorySmash feed is excellent. There, I said it. All right, you guys, the next story told is so, so funny. It's a simple story, it's a funny story, and it's by one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He is often on Dr. Drew's show. He's also often on Adam Carolla's show. His name is Mike Carano, and this is his story about delivering Burt Reynolds. And when I say delivering Burt Reynolds, I mean Mike took a wax figure of Burt Reynolds, a full-size wax figure of Burt Reynolds from Los Angeles here in the Hollywood Wax Museum all the way down to Florida. I think it was Florida State where Burt went to college. So he's here right now, you guys. Check out Mike Carano and his story, Delivering Burt Reynolds, from June 11th, 2018.
And she goes, hey, someone wants to say hi to you. Hands me her phone. Now I'm on the phone with Burt friggin' Reynolds. And I'll be honest with you, there was a lesson to be learned here, and the lesson was be in the moment and be present, because I wasn't. Because all I could think about was, when's he getting off the phone so I can call people and tell them I just talked to Burt Reynolds? Paying no attention to what Burt Reynolds was saying, the soothing, dulcet tones of Mr. Burt Reynolds. And I was freaking out inside. I was freaking out. And the entire time he's talking, I'm like, I need to say something. I need to say something. I need to be in this conversation. I need to be involved, be present, you know, do something. So then I said, what are you going to do with that statue? And he goes, it's going to Florida State University, where I went to school. And it's going to be in the theater department on display. I promise you, I'm being completely truthful here. Before he finished the word display, I had said, my friends and I will drive it there for free. And we are going to pick up Wax Burt Reynolds on Saturday morning and drive it across the country. We borrow cameras. We grab a bunch of credit cards. I rent a minivan Saturday morning, bright and early. Matt and Steve and our friend Chris that we invited along show up at my house in Orange County, and we paint the minivan. Delivering Burt across the back, eastbound and down on the sides. And I made a bunch of those little baby on board stickers that said Burt on board in all the windows. We immediately started breaking the contract, which was, I think the primary concern they had was that Burt will be staying in a locked box, not to be removed for the entire duration of the trip. We didn't have a box, so we just threw his body in the back with our luggage, and I borrowed a drum case from my sister for the head. And we packed it with Star Trek t-shirts that were left over from the Star Trek show. headed off to the wax museum, just out of our minds, excited, like, and nervous. And we were expecting Burt Reynolds is going to, might call us and find out how it's going. And we get to the wax museum, we pick up Wax Burt. Matt and Steve are going berserk. This is their hero. And we're transporting a 6-foot tall statue of him across the country. So now we've got Burt in the van and we decide, let's take Burt to Fridays for lunch. So we go into TGI Fridays, place his head on the table, broke the contract right there. Then we headed off to the beach in San Diego and set him up at the beach with his cowboy hat and his suit and his blazer so Burt could see the Pacific Ocean for one last time. Then trucked it on to Tucson, listening to the Cannonball Run soundtrack and reading his biography out loud. And we headed off to Tombstone with, you know, our road trip companion, Wax Burt Reynolds. We're in Tombstone. We meet a guy who owns a hat shop. And we go, "You Burt Reynolds fan?" He goes, "Go talk to my wife right now, across the street." I think her name was Adele. Not sure. Older grandmother-like woman, very stern. We walk in with the Burt Reynolds head. She just points at us, turns her finger around, and gives us the old come with me sign, takes us in her office. There's a Burt Reynolds centerfold over her desk, and just talked about Burt Reynolds for 15 or 20 minutes. Then we thought, let's celebrate this amazing that we're running into Burt Reynolds people everywhere we know, and everyone wants to talk about Burt Reynolds. So we go to the bar to have drinks, of course. It's 10 in the morning. We're doing a couple of shots of whiskey. A guy is walking down that wooden sidewalk street in Tombstone, sees the Burt Reynolds in the bar and comes in, freaks out. "You got to meet my friend. He thinks he's Burt Reynolds. He's got the mustache. He dresses like Burt Reynolds. He talks like Burt Reynolds. His wife dresses like Sally Fields, and they have the Trans Am." We're like, "Where is he?" "That's a problem. He's in the middle of the desert with 200 head of cattle." We're like, "Let's go." So we drove our stupid minivan with Delivering Burt painted all over it, over the desert. And I mean truly over the desert. This wasn't on a road. This is like an hour into the desert, around cactus, over tumbleweeds, following him in his Jeep, and waited out there for this cowboy who came riding up on a horse with his black hat on to get pictures of him with Wax Burt. And we met his wife, and he had amazing Burt Reynolds stories. He had pictures of Burt, and he was like, "He's a hero of mine. When I first went and saw Smokey and the Bandit when I was a kid," and we were like, "This is magical, the stuff that's happening on this trip. This is an amazing coincidence." The next couple of days, we took Burt to the Davy Crockett Monument in Texas. We took Burt to restaurants, strip clubs, bars. We took him out with us everywhere. We treated him like he was one of the guys, man. And we were starting to become attached to him, frankly, even though we're three adult men with a wax statue of Burt Reynolds.
By the way, you guys, if you want to hear any of these full episodes, please go back and listen to them. You'll find the entire list of Storyworthy episodes at storyworthypodcast.com and also over there on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. There's just so many ways to listen to Storyworthy. I don't have to tell you. All right, you guys, we're going to shift gears here. And the next story coming at you is from the very talented comedian Jude Shelton. And this is actually it's a very serious story that was, it just touched me. It's sad, man. It's a sad story. But Jude is just such a wordsmith, and she crafts her story so well. This is just a portion of her story. And again, I urge you to go back, listen to the whole thing. The name of this story is Precious, and it's from October 10th. 2011.
When I was 11 years old, I loved the show The Facts of Life. One evening, after watching an episode, I woke my mother up from a nap on the couch and told her I wanted to go to boarding school. She jerked awake, kicking the empty bag of pretzels off her lap and knocking over one or two of the many molding glasses of vodka that lined the coffee table. I told her I thought I needed it, and to my surprise, she agreed. She found one advertised in the back of Sunset magazine, and that fall I was off, and for good and forever. I loved boarding school so much I never wanted to leave, and usually I could find a friend's family that would take me in for Thanksgiving or Easter, but Christmas and summer I had to go home, back to Orange County, California, back to Fullerton. Summers in Fullerton, and especially in the brand new treeless subdivision where I lived, were a dingy yellow glare that hung like a pointed finger or a slap, making sure you saw it before it smacked you in front of the neighbors. Nothing moved, even the flies were tentative, watching out for the many fly swatters in their glassy black compound eyes. The air was a heavy boot that pinned the hands on the clock and kept the pages of the desk calendar from flipping. The only evidence of life was the sound in the distance of the Dodger game narrated by Vin Scully and brought to you by Farmer John Hot Dogs. I didn't have any friends in Fullerton. I was the dirty girl they called retarded because I'd bust out in tears if I had to read in front of the class, and because once I walked through the lunchroom in my underwear when I didn't realize my wraparound skirt had fallen off while I was getting a frozen box of orange juice from the lunch lady. So when I went off to school in another state, no one noticed, and when I came home, no one cared. Just because I had a sharp three-piece tweed uniform and a nice new haircut didn't make me any more interesting or popular. Summers were basically small trips to the kitchen, the bathroom, up and down the stairs, and maybe, if I had 15 cents, a walk over to Thrifty's for a scoop of ice cream. Mostly, I laid in bed fully dressed, listening to records with a huge pair of headphones. I left everything in the suitcase. Soon enough, I'd zip it up, be treated to a celebratory dinner at a local Chinese restaurant, and head back to school, the color returning to my cheeks as I landed in Colorado Springs, where we'd all meet the nuns and make a stop at McDonald's before heading home. I mean, to school.
Okay, you guys, the next story is a hilarious story from comedian and actor Rick Overton. Rick and I have been friends for years now, and he just always delivers. He's been on Storyworthy at least 3 or 4 times. He's also done Story Smash, and I've been on his show, and just a quality person, all-around amazing guy. And this is his story, Orgies, which needs no explanation, and it's from April 22nd, 2013.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. Now you're probably wondering, what's Morgan Freeman doing punching Rick Overton's time up like this? And you are listening to Storyworthy.
We were working at the club, and let's say the comedians' names were Adam and Jack, just to protect whoever at this point. We were the three guys. I was the headliner, and they were opener and middle. And the owner says, "Hey guys, you know, after the show, the Ferret Sisters were here. They really enjoyed it, and you are invited." And we went, "Invited to the Ferret Sisters? Oh no, they're cute girls, but one of them owns a ferret. Oh, okay." And so, no, don't worry, man. Don't worry. The Ferret Sisters aim to please. And so we went out driving in the back of the manager's Z car, where there's too many of us, so the hatch is open. There's an exhaust leak, and it was good. The hatches are just fucking dummies with limbs sticking out the back, you know, shit-faced morons going out to this party. I got my twin Corbels. Ricky traveled with his twin Corbels. No, these are my twin Corbels. You get your own complete bottles of Corbel. So, you know, Ricky Two Corks from New Jersey. Hey, it's Ricky Two Corks. And so we finally get to the complex, and we're going up the stairs. And I'd been to a couple of fun, goofy parties in New York City earlier, but this is the first time I've seen anything like that. Those parties were just good. They weren't funny. I fucked a lot and then went to sleep. You know, it was not really... You know, it's not good. The jokes aren't good when everything goes great, you know. Two Jews walk into a bar, recognize each other, have a drink, go home. Boo, get off. There's no conflict. We hate you for no conflict. And so this one, though, was a little more odd. So we're going up the stairs, and we're greeted by a girl, a cute girl, who had this sort of comforter on. And she throws a ballet leg up on the railing, and da-da-da, opens it up naked. I'm guessing this is the place. So we go in, and there's a couple of, you know, on the sofa bobbing asses and legs sticking out, and going, this is definitely the fucking place. So, and there's people looking to meet people. These are the comedians from the club. Oh, hey, what's it like? So I met the girl who was a ticket taker at the local cinema. And the fellas broke off with the other people that they could hook up with. And I had sex with her twice. And then I'm drunk. I'm done. I'm in my 20s. I'm still fucking done. That's it. Two times and I'm done, because I'm drunk and coming twice is like that amount of fluid. And, you know, you should bring it into the shop and top up again before you go back on the road, you know. So I'm down 2 quarts. And so now I'm pretty tired. Now the girl... that greeted us at the top. Now we're just sitting in the pool, and I'm a bottle and a half in on the Corbels. And so I'm just sort of blurg-a-de-glorg and splurg-a-blah, looking around at the surreal circus around me with my arms up at the edge of the pool. And that girl dives in, and she pops up, dolphins up in front of me, and she goes, "Do you ever have Aquahead?" And I went, before I could talk, because there's no blood in my brain, and I'm just a moron at this point. And she goes, "Aquahead." And I went, bloop, and down she goes. And then suddenly there's these bubbles. And I'm like, "Oh, no, 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 no." And it's really bad. "Hey, hey, 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 blah, 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 blah." And she goes, "Pah." She comes up, "Aquahead, what do you think?" "Nah, that's great, that's great. Let's get out of the pool." And so, and she was... I want to brag and say I could get it up one more time. I couldn't. I was just pounded. I was done. It was a done dummy at that point. And she tried and tried and tried, and I couldn't. I just was done. So I'm sitting there, and now I'm looking at back in the bedroom there, drying off, and there's the club manager sleeping with the girl I was just having sex with. And it's kind of that weird, out of the 70s brandy snifter mentality of... I'm looking at him, just his ass just bonk, 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 going up and down into her. And she looks over and kind of does the eyebrows like, "What can I say?" And he looks over at me. And so I just to break the weirdness, I go, "So how were the numbers tonight? Were they good? Both shows was good?" "Oh, yeah, yeah, man. Second show wasn't as good as the first, but they're a couple. We made the nut, And then, she looked like, "Okay, everything's fine." Because what do I owe her or me? She don't owe me anything, So this was... And so finally, the girl comes back that was very determined to get one more round out of me. And she goes, "Yeah? No? You want to see my ferret?" "Oh, yeah." Change the subject. I go, "Yes. Show me the ferret." So she goes to the cage, pulls this ferret out in a cage, and unhitches it and hands him to him. And he goes, "Oh, he's kind of cute. Yeah, so he's friendly, right?" He goes, "Oh, he loves people." And there's like a little sweat drop on my nose, but it's so loaded with like alcohol and sugar. He goes, "Lick, lick," and just bites into the end of my nose. And I stand up, and there's blood streaming down my face and this long necktie of a weasel hanging down from my face. And I'm like, and I go, "Wee!" And I just give him kind of a rib squeeze to make him let go. And now I'm holding him. He's biting me all over the outside of my hand because they're snake long. And they can whip around and just keep me. So I'm just all covered in bites. And I'm like, "Oh, my God, I want to see medical papers on your fucking ferret right now." And she could not produce any rabies history shot paperwork for me. So there we are. Loaded back into the Z car, all the dummies and the limbs, like riding back into the sunrise again in the morning. Totally hungover. I got a big round, the round Band-Aid that when it fills with blood, it's like the clown with the red clown nose going home, And I just picture the doctor coming out of the lab going, "Well, Mr. Overton, I don't know how you did it. You completely dodged herpes, but you got rabies, and so we're going to have to put you down."
You guys probably heard my former co-host, Hannes Finney, laughing in the background there. Hannes hosted Storyworthy with me for 6 years, as many of you know, and we're still very good friends. One of the things I miss about Hannes is his laugh, because he is just he's always a great audience member. Do you know what I mean? Hannes Finney is a great audience member. There, I said it. Anyway, you guys, I hope you enjoyed that. Rick Overton talking about orgies. And if you did, remember, you guys, I have kicked off a Patreon campaign. If you head over to patreon.com/storyworthy, you will find different tiers where you can support me. You can show me your love for only $5 a month. That's only $1 a show. You are fully supporting me, and I appreciate it so much. Email me anytime. Would you do that? Email me. Tell me if you have any ideas for the show as well. If you have any ideas for guests you want me to have on. Just tell me how you're doing. Would you do that? ChristineBlackburn1@gmail.com. ChristineBlackburn1@gmail.com. Okay, you guys, the next storyteller coming up right now is a writer on the show Glow, and she's super talented. Her name is Sasha Rothschild, and this story is from last summer. The title of the story is "I Was Dragged Under a Train." That's the title of the story. I was dragged under a train. So As you can imagine, it's a dramatic story, and I have to tell you, I got absolutely queasy as she told me this story. I mean, I almost passed out sitting across from her telling this story, and she wasn't, you know, she wasn't even reading it. She was just telling me the story. There was no notes or anything. She just, she has an amazing way with words. Perhaps that's why she's so accomplished. I would think so. Anyway, you guys, I think you'll enjoy it as well. And again, you can hear the entire story over there on storyworthypodcast.com or on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you know, wherever you listen. Here she is, Sasha Rothschild. I am not drinking at all. I'm absolutely sober because I have to study and because I have to get back. And I'm really a responsible person because I had actually done all my drinking and drugging in junior high. So by college, I was very straight-laced. So I'm with my friend, and it's time for me to get on back to Boston. The last train of the night was leaving 13 minutes after midnight at 12:13, and I am running down the train steps of the Amtrak station in Providence, Rhode Island, with my huge platform heels and my crossbody bag on my hip. And I see that my train is leaving the station, and somehow I must have been a few minutes late, and this is a disaster, and I can't miss class the next morning. And I noticed that one of the doors of the train was sort of flapping open and closed as the train rumbled on. And I thought, how hard could it really be to run and try and jump into that door as it opens and closes and opens and closes? And I went for it, and I took a running start, and I leapt, and I heard one man who was on the train track scream, "Don't jump!" But it was too late. I was already in the air with my huge platform heels, and I dove into the door, and my right hand and my right leg got inside the train, and I was clinging to the inside of the train with my right hand. My left leg didn't clear the gap that we are all supposed to mind. If you've ever been in London, there's that recording, Mind the Gap. If you've been on a subway station, there's that small space. So my left leg was in that gap. And as the train kept barreling forward, my left leg kept getting sucked deeper and deeper into the gap. And I could no longer hold on with my right arm. And finally, I let go, and my whole body swung around and was trapped in this gap. So it is between the platform and the moving train. Now, this has happened to people before. When it happens to men, who are generally bigger, they get trapped there and twisted and twisted and twisted. Their lower body twists as the train goes. But they are still conscious and alive, and sometimes the train will be stopped by authorities, and the family will come and have to say goodbye to their loved one trapped there. And then once the train moves on, their lower half of their body falls out of themselves, and they die immediately. If a child falls in the gap, the child is so small that they fall right through, and then what happens is up to fate. I was just the size that, as I was being circled around the train in the gap, my hips broke. My pelvis literally cracked because that was the widest part, but it cracked just enough that I then was sucked under the train and fell through the gap, which is a lucky thing because had I been stuck there, all my organs would have been twisted around. So now I am under the train and totally conscious, by the way. And it is so loud. That was the thing that I most remember is how loud being under a train is. And I thought to myself when I was under there, I had three very, very distinct thoughts. I can't believe this is happening. This is happening. And oh my God, I'm going to die. And once I decided I was going to die, I became incredibly calm. And all of a sudden, the 5 pounds that I was desperate to lose my whole life didn't matter. And my grades didn't matter. And all the things that I thought were important didn't matter. And I just sort of eased into this split second of my life will be over. When I got sucked under the train, it was in between two cars. And so I had a couple seconds before a wheel was going to slice me in half.
In that couple seconds, something clicked in and I instinctively flung myself over the rail and landed 6 feet underneath the platform. So now I am lying on gravel and looking up, and up ahead the train is still moving. Yeah, now is that dramatic or what? That's what I'm talking about, man. She is fantastic. Sasha Rothschild, what an amazing talent. And I am so glad she is fine. You would never know from Sasha Rothschild. When you look at her now, you'd never know she went through this. She's a beautiful girl, and you'd never know she was dragged under a train. Jesus. All right, you guys, the next story I want to bring to you, part of the story again, is from actor Toby Huss. Toby is so accomplished. You guys see him all the time on television. An amazing guy. And he told this story to me 6 years ago about his mother having cancer, but for some reason it is so funny and so well told, I still literally pee my pants when I hear the story. It's that crazy. Here's his story right now, you guys. Toby Huss talking about cancer from January 13th, 2013.
Hey, redneck, listen to Story Worthy.
We were in Ames, and they're pretty good nurses at this, the Mary Greeley, I think, hospital we were at in Ames. And my mother, pretty big boozer for most of her life, and also a smoker, and a pretty nutty sort of, okay, sometimes awful, just awful human, but sometimes okay, but filled with cancer and just anger and just craziness. One of the head nurses came in, and you're talking to my mother about the cancer, and you could see she's in denial of it. She doesn't want to believe that she has cancer, and, you know, just stops. And she smoked for, what, 50 years, I think, you know, but doesn't have lung cancer, colon cancer, and, you know, metastasized. It's probably full of all sorts of ugliness in there if you get in there. But she, you know, didn't want to admit and was being mean to the nurses and pretty combative, that sort of a way. She's kind of a combative, mean woman anyway. So the nurse wanted to know her drug history and wanted to know her health history, and had a whiteboard in the hospital room. This is a weird little hospital room. I think they made it for smaller beds at one point, so they had to angle the beds. So the beds, the feng shui of the room is weird. So the bed's on the angle, and I was going downstairs and buying coffees and chocolates and sort of wandering around and coming back up, and she was yelling at the nurses. And at one point, the nurse goes, "Okay, so let's just talk about, you know, what your medical history and stuff." She's writing things down on a whiteboard there, and she goes, "Now, have you, do you have any drug allergies? Have you done any of this?" She's, "No, I don't have any drug allergies. Everything's fine. And have you done this?" And, "No, I haven't had any big operations recently. I haven't had any really sicknesses." And then she said, "Have you ever smoked?" And my mom went, "Ah." And I went, "Ah? What is ah? What do you mean, ah? That's not ah." And I said to the nurse, "She smoked for 5 decades. For 50 years, this lady smoked. She smoked for 50 years, a lot of cigarettes." And my mom looked at the nurse and with an angry face and went, "Ah, log it and forget it." And I went, "Log it and forget? What the fuck does log it? What do you mean log it and what is happening here? You have, wait, we just got diagnosed with, and you, ah." But the more I thought about it, she said two things. This whole thing, I thought, you know, maybe I didn't know her that well. I think log it and forget it really works in a lot of ways. Fucking log it and forget it. If you're having troubles with your old lady, did you do this and this and this? Fucking log it and forget it. It's your fucking problem. Log it and forget it. I fucking smoke as much as I want. I get cancer. I don't give a shit. Fucking log it and forget it. At the grocery store. But, sir, you still owe 45 cents. Oh, fucking log it and forget it. I have shit to do. Fucking log it. Put it in your log and shove it up your ass. It's so brilliant. Log it and forget it. Smoke for 5 decades. I'm angry at you. Log it and forget it. God love you. I think that's her fighting spirit.
Was that funny? Did I tell you or what? I know. The guy is amazing. Only Toby could be so funny, so clever. He's just a great talent, you guys. Find Toby Huss over there on your social media. You got to follow this guy. He's also an amazing photographer. He has a great eye. And I'll tell you this, he does a killer Frank Sinatra impression. There. How do you like that? Okay, you guys, two stories left in this 9-year anniversary special part one. And the next one is coming from master storyteller Kevin Allison. Kevin Allison of the Risk Podcast told a story to me on November 16th, 2014 about strange sex. And let me tell you, it's pretty strange.
So I found myself just blurting out to him, let's just go back to my place. So we walk up one flight of stairs and another flight of stairs and another flight of stairs. And now we're in the lamplight outside and I can see, oh no, this is not a samurai. He's a little guy with a big beaky nose and he's doing a lot of sniffling and shivering like he might be on something. And I thought to myself, geez, you know, I'm from Ohio. I don't know how to be impolite and, like, cut things off. I mean, what am I going to say? Oh, my gosh, I have an appointment with the nighttime dentist I forgot about. So instead, I just said, what's your name? And he said, Ham. And I said, Ham? He said, no, Ham. I said, Ham. He said, no, Ham. He was not a chipper guy. I thought, geez, Kev, the last thing you should do is actually take this guy home with you. So we get back to my place. And as we're walking in, I'm thinking, all right, what should I do now? Maybe turn on some Miles Davis, light some candles. But no, as soon as we walk in the door and it closes behind us, Ham goes into command mode. He says, stand over there. I said, excuse me? He said, stand over there. And I thought, oh my gosh, maybe this is this thing I've heard about that they call dominance and submission. Maybe I'm supposed to just yes and all this and kind of go with the flow like an actor and see what happens. So I figured, well, I mean, that's easier than saying no because, you know, I'm from Ohio. So I stood over there. And then he's looking at me and he says, take off your clothes. And I said, Ham, do you think we can keep it down a little bit? He said, take off your clothes. So I took off all my clothes. And now I'm making excuses. I'm thinking, well, maybe today I'll kind of see the light. I'll have a sort of euphoric eureka moment and realize the joy of dominance and submission. So let's just, you know, go all out and see what happens. Now I'm naked and he's studying me still. And then he really lays it on me. He says, put the shoes on your balls. I said, pardon me? He said, tie the shoes to your balls. He's acting like, how'd this guy get this far in life without learning how to tie shoes to his balls? He had to show me what he meant. He wanted me to tie the laces together of my Converse sneakers so that, you know, the same way people would do if they were going to throw them over a telephone wire. And then he wanted me to take this contraption and wrap it kind of like a propeller around my balls so that the shoes would end up dangling at my shins. Well, at this point, I'm so curious as to where the fuck this could be going next that I did what he said. Now I'm feeling very, very pinched, you know, because Converse, I mean, I had these the most heavy arch supports in there that money could buy. Converse are not good for your feet. And now I'm learning they're also not all that great for your balls. So I'm standing there like a cowboy because I'm all bow-legged, and I'm thinking, all right, Ham, let's get to the next part of the play here as quickly as possible. Then he takes down his pants. He's still standing at the door, like 12 feet away on the other side of the room, and he just starts masturbating like a madman. He's just having me stand there, and he's just like, whacking off. He's getting all red in the face and sweaty and just going crazy. And I thought, oh my gosh, well, this might be over pretty soon because he appears to be the world's fastest masturbator. But I had nothing to do. So after a while, you know, I mean, I think he was on something, and sometimes that means it might take a while. After a while, I just thought, well, why don't I initiate where this could go next? So I said, Ham, do you think we might want to move to the bedroom or something? And he got really angry, and he said, what's your problem? You look great.
What did I tell you? I told you it was strange, but you gotta love Kevin Allison. He's an amazing guy. He's an actor, and he's just such a creative person, always teaching, always learning, always sharing, just a quality human being, and I am super happy to know Kevin Allison. All right, you guys, wrapping up my 9-year anniversary special, part one, is a guy that I still admire to this day. He is such an inspiration. I can still text him, and he will text me back. How do you like that? That's what a quality person this guy is. Sugar Ray Leonard. I sat down with the champ on August 21st, 2014, and he shared this story with me that he called The Continuity of Life and Living. You see it right now, you guys. Sugar Ray Leonard.
Hello there. I'm Sugar Ray Leonard, and you're listening to Storyworthy. You know, when I was asked by my assistant, Michelle, to think of a topic that I want to discuss, I don't know, for some reason, I thought about continuity of living in life. I don't know why that came to mind, but then again, sitting here with you, I know why. Because, you know, life is very challenging. Life is beautiful. My life in particular has been an amazing, wonderful, blessed period of being able to, first of all, accomplish what I've done in the ring, being in a position to help my parents, to buy my mother her first new home. I mean, I get teary-eyed when I think about that because it's something that seems so small is really so big. I heard you talk earlier about your dad. Yes, and my dad, God bless him, he's 92. I stopped him from driving last year. And the crazy thing about it, Christine, was the fact that I said, Pops, I mean, me telling my father, Pops, you can't drive anymore. He looked at me like a father looked at his son or daughter. And he said, almost teary-eyed, he said, no more. I said, no more, Papa. No more. You can't drive anymore. It's too dangerous. So, you know, with that being said, continuity of life and living, we take so much for granted. Well, I'll say I've taken so much for granted. You know, our kids grow up so fast now, especially in this generation, this society, and this culture. They grow up so fast. They experience things a lot sooner than we used to. They know a little bit more than we used to. They want more things because more people are having better things than we had back in the day. I tend to forget about how wonderful and how blessed I am with an incredible wife. I take it for granted sometimes. And sometimes she say something to me like, pick that up or do this or do that. And I look at her like I'm saying, I'm Sugar Ray Leonard. I don't have to do that. Well, thank God I learned to pause in my program. So I pause and I don't say it. But life is meant to enjoy. Life is meant to experience. Life is meant to give back, be of service. I find so much compassion, so much love when I help those that need help. I try to encourage, I try to assist these young people because the generation of kids we have now, they're facing such challenges with trying to be the best, trying to have the biggest, you know, the most expensive car or the biggest diamond ring, or to get on television, you have to pull your pants down. I mean, all these things have changed since I was a little kid. They're not the right things, but they sell. They sell. Unfortunately, they sell. Living life, and there has to be a consistency to that. When you hold your son or your daughter 6 months, 1 year, you got to continue to do that. They need that. They desperately need that. Even as they become teenagers and harder to communicate with, you have to reach out. Sometimes we have to bite the bullet. Sometimes we have to bite our lip, our lower lip, and say, you know what? So maybe it's not what I said, it's how I said it. And I'm learning all these tools. I'm learning all these factors that I can become a better father. I can become a better friend. I can become a better husband. You know, life is challenging. Life is a fight. And if you stay focused and in shape, you do your due diligence, you do your road work, you have the right corner, you get up from knockdowns. In other words, what I'm trying to say is the fact that we all are fighters, inside, outside the ring. And if you apply the same principles that I applied to become a world champion and an Olympic gold medal winner, a contestant on Dance with the Stars. No, I'm just saying, that was a joke, a big joke. But you got to be a fighter. How about that?
All right, you guys, I hope you enjoyed the first 9 stories in my 9-year anniversary special. I'll be back next week for part 2, and you'll hear 9 more stories from more of my very favorite stories over the last 9 years. And you guys, don't forget to check out my Patreon page. Like I said, patreon.com/storyworthy. I just kicked it up again, and I'm really excited about some of my tier levels and all that stuff. And I could really use your support. So thank you very, very much. And don't forget to follow me over on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy. And don't forget to check out Screwed Up Stories, my other podcast, on the Westwood One Network. ScrewedUpStories.com and on social media at Screw Stories. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today and being a fan of Storyworthy. I appreciate it beyond belief. Really, you guys, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. And today, on behalf of Adam Carolla, Wendy McClendon Covey, Mike Carano, Jude Shelton, Rick Overton, Sasha Rothschild, Toby Huss, Kevin Allison, and Sugar Ray Leonard, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.